welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, welcome to Turn the Page. My name is Ralph Couteau, librarian here at the Syosset Library. With me is our guest, Oliver Turnbull. We'd like to introduce yourself. He is the author of great books such as The Lesson and the upcoming No Gods, No Monsters, which I want to talk about, definitely. Oliver.
Hi. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
What brought your name up to me was I read an advanced copy of No Gods, No Monsters. And I was like, wow. And I was really blown away. I enjoy reading fantasy, but when I read something that really kind of like gets me thinking, gets me my brain working, I'm always amazed because a lot of it sometimes you find some books, I enjoy them, but they're kind of more spoon-fed. The story kind of goes along, you're going off the plot. This one took me left turns, right turns. I kind of like, what's going on? Wait, what happened? I thought this character was, wait. And I love that. I love something that gets my brain going. Well, after reading No Gods, No Monsters, I wanted to know, how did you become a writer?
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I wanted to be a scientist. And the reason why was because I was just very interested in how the world worked. I was just a very curious kid. And I didn't consider writing as a potential vocation until an English teacher, actually. She assigned us The Diary of Anne Frank to read. And she wanted us to write an essay, typical student behavior. Mm-hmm. I procrastinated on reading the book until the very last minute. But then when I read it, I was just completely moved by the story. And I wrote this really impassioned essay, just came right out of me, must have done some editing on it. And then I, turned it in. And when she handed it back to me with the grade, she was like, have you considered being a writer? You can write. And that was the first time that it occurred to me that that was a thing that I could do, personally, or that anyone could do. And from there, I got, bug. I started writing essays, I started writing fiction in high school and, giving it to my friends. And when I applied to college, I applied to professional writing, which was like an umbrella degree. It was creative writing and nonfiction, journalism, technical writing, grant writing. I was like, somehow, some way, I was going to be a writer in some form. Okay. And, after that, I applied to an MFA and, was working on what became The Lesson while I was there.
Oh, so you started working that pretty early, relatively.
Yeah. I mean, in high school, I was writing urban fiction. It was mostly like people in their 20s, driving around in cars, having relationship troubles. And I had no idea, I was a kid, so they didn't really have jobs or anything.
Right.
But, the people that I would give it to, they really enjoyed it. And so it gave me the bug. It made me think I could do it. And then in college, I got serious. I started reading the first novel I read in a genre I started writing in was The Loth of Heaven by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Oh, yeah.
It's a science fiction novel. Mm-hmm. And I loved it so much. I just kept reading her. She is, hands down my favorite author. My favorite book from her is The Dispossessed. And so from there, I was like, I knew I could write fiction at that point. Like I had examples of that, but then I got the bug for science fiction and I started writing science fiction fantasy. I got into genre that way.
What is your process when you're writing? Are you someone who, has to be locked away somewhere in a room to write? Do you need to be more, could you be in a cafe somewhere? How does that work with you?
Yeah, so I actually work best outside somewhere. If I'm sitting in a park, that's great. If I'm in a cafe, that's also great. I tend to be most productive in my writing if I have some other kind of stimuli that isn't just an empty room. But still off by myself, it's not like I tune out most of the noise, but it helps to have a little bit of noise around me. Okay. And also it helps to I get distracted really easy if I'm at home. So, you know, which has made the pandemic like really hard. Like I just had to figure out, just learn new coping skills for working in my apartment. But, you know, typically, you know, speaking, I like to work outside and I like to work really early. So I'll get up really early and write. And I'm the most productive if I do it first thing in the morning when my brain hasn't like woken up completely and I can't be like, you know, overly critical of what I'm actually writing down. Yeah.
Right. Ah, all right. Interesting. When you, there's a part in your book in No Gods, No Monsters, one character who is from the Caribbean. I believe she was from
St. Thomas, probably.
Yeah. St. Thomas. Is your background from the Caribbean as well?
Yeah. So, you know, that English teacher I mentioned, she was my middle school teacher at Adelita Cancran Junior High School, which is in St. Thomas, USVI. Okay. And I grew up there. So I was, you know, from when I was a little kid, you know, baby, like 1 year, you know, my mom and my dad are both from the Virgin Islands as well. But my mom and dad actually met in Maryland while my dad was stationed in the military there. Okay. And so, you know, pretty early on, I went back home and was, you know, grew up there. And then since then have been around a bit, but yeah.
Okay. I asked because I'm also a Caribbean background from Haiti. And I know—
Oh, dope.
Yeah, I remember saying that I wanted to do something like writing as well or being publishing. I remember my parents were like, no, it's gonna be doctor, lawyer. They were very like that kind of stereotypical kind of like, gotta be professional or else, you know, what are you gonna write stuff? What are you drawing here? You're drawing pictures. What are these pictures thing? I would do a Haitian accent, but I wouldn't do it justice because that's to it actually when we say that. And I always felt a little bit pushback. So I'm just curious if you had the same experience that I had.
Oh no, my mom was super encouraging. I think some of it might, you know, it might have helped that when I was in high school, I started submitting essays to essay contests and I would occasionally win. And so she was a very proud mom. And when she saw that I was doing something with it, I think she was like, yeah, you know, when I told her I was going to go to school for, you know, professional writing and I wanted to be a writer, she, you know, thankfully believed in me and was very happy to push me that direction. Yeah.
Right. Getting away from you now to your work. What, in No Gods, No Monsters, a theme I had throughout the book was I felt a sense of, I guess it was an alienation, sort of like the way these characters are kind of separate from society. They feel kind of like outcasts. I like that you had also a lot of some LGBTQ representation. Throughout the book, I felt a sense of like unease, like the characters were kind of, I don't know, like a sense of things were wrong, things were going wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in the lesson, I have a couple queer characters as well, but you know, definitely when I was working on this project, it was really important to me to, you know, have monstrosity or this idea that monsters exist in the world intersect with other aspects of identity, race, class, gender, and, you know, orientation and all of these things. And so, you know, I wanted to have a diverse, you know, diverse point of views to look at this particular aspect of the story. And I also, you know, wanted to explore how marginalization interacts with, you know, this being a monster. Wait, like, how does that affect the experience of being a monster? So that became really like a really core goal of the project. The sense of unease is just once you start writing about monsters, you start just, you know, gravitating towards the horror side of things. And I, you know, have dabbled in horror. You know, this was my first time really, really exploring it. But when growing up, I really loved horror. I watched a lot of horror. Some of my favorite TV shows, while not exactly horror, were horror influenced, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, and Charmed. I would just watch reruns of Charmed endlessly. And so having that interest from very early on, and then I started reading urban fantasy and horror, you know, more recently, I was like, let me try this and see what happens. And, you know, I didn't know that the horror elements would have been so strong in the book. It just kind of came out as I was working on it.
Right. like we got monsters and it's gonna kind of
right. It's gonna be a little creepy, I imagine.
Right. It's an element sometimes I've you know, some other authors sometimes they pull that off. Sometimes it goes either too much maybe to the horror, but to the or to the fantastical. I found that your book, not to aggrandize, but it just it had a nice balance. I just want to say I saw a good balance of both the fantastic element, fantasy element, and also the horror element. Was kind of like, that's why I give some people the unease too. I'm like, all right, where are we going with this? Where are we going here? Where are we going here? You know, kind of just an impression I had. I should have wrote these things down. These impressions as I'm reading it, but I was just so kind of engrossed in it that I was just kind of like, okay. So just wanted to add that.
Thank you so much. If you hear cars passing by, my room is right next to the road. So apologies. Okay. Yeah.
No problem. So you mentioned, I noticed the book is it's going to be a series. How, I guess, well, one thing I'd be curious is when do you think the next one will be coming out?
Ooh, I'm working on it right now. And it's, so No Gods, No Monsters was my second novel. And it was an interesting struggle to work on because I was working on it while I was doing the, you know, touring for the first book. Mm-hmm. And also second novels are hard. You know, I feel like in some ways a lesson got finished by accident, you know, and this one had to be very intentional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thankfully worked out, but now I'm having like the second novel in a trilogy blues where it's I'm finding that challenging because I want to pay off things that are happening in the first book and I want to set up the third book really well. And you know, it's going, but it's due to my publisher next year around this time.
Okay.
So hopefully not too far off.
All right, great. All right. So we didn't want any George R. R. Martin type situation.
No, I'll try.
Great. You mentioned that you touched on this before, but what would you say would be your influences as a writer?
Oh, definitely Ursula K. Le Guin. I'm very much interested in looking at things from a sociological vantage. So with The Lesson, it's a first contact novel, but I'm looking at several different characters and their relationship to this first contact, aliens arriving, and how they relate to this alien arrival in different ways, you know, depending on their identity, their interest, their personal journey, that sort of thing. And that's something that I think I'm just interested in, but also is highly influenced by Ursula K. Le Guin's approach to, you know, character, where it's very much sociological, anthropological. It's looking at, you know, people from all different aspects of their identity in relation to a particular thing, a particular world, a particular conflict. So that's an influence. Octavia Butler, for sure. She's incredible. You know, huge influence on just like, I like hopeful and messy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I tend to write stories that are, there's a darkness to it, but there's also a light. And I think that Octavia Butler's work is a really great balance of stuff that are, you know, is really challenging, but also, you know, things that are, you know, hopeful, potentially hopeful. People are finding their way through the dark. And I find that that's a big part of my writing as well. Mm. N.K. Jemisin is, I'm a huge fan of N.K. Jemisin's work as well. I'm a big fan of Ted Chiang's work. Mm. On the realist side, I'm a big fan of Alice Munro. She's a short story writer. And just, you know, read her stories all the time. And yeah, I would say those are my biggest influences. I recently, I've, you know, fallen in love with Emily St. John Mandel's work as well.
Yes, yeah, Station 11 was excellent.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
With those influences, would you, I guess, what can I say? Would your process be more, like I touched on sort of the themes that some of these authors, especially Ursula K. Le Guin goes into. Do you, I'm trying to get the process. Do you start with sort of a kernel, like what is the kernel for the idea for No Gods, No Monsters? How about that? It's a better way to say it.
Okay. That's a really good question, actually. I think I tend to start with ideas first. I'm very much idea oriented. So a thing that I want to explore or think about through a story. So, and with No Gods, No Monsters, I wanted to explore primarily systems of organization and how they influence the events for good or ill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And to tie that with these tropes that I really love. So take something that I really love, you know, just on its face, monsters, vampires, werewolves. I have some monsters from the, you know, from Caribbean folklore as well, things I grew up hearing from my aunts and cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, marry that to discussions of like social movements, social justice, mm-hmm. How people organize to create safety and stability for themselves, and also how organizations or systems can cause harm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, a big motivator with the story. And then from there, I start thinking about characters. And I'm like, what's my vehicle into this kind of story? And so, you know, Lena came pretty early. You know, she's the sister of the person that got, you know, shot and killed by the police.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very interested in her relationship to her brother, who, you know, also, you know, struggled with addiction. It's, you know, something that I was pulling from, you know, from, you know, things that, you know, from my relationship with my family. And I was, you know, interested in her, how she felt in relation to things that had happened to her brother, and, you know, her helplessness in being able to help, you know, him deal with some of his demons. And that became, you know, the crux of the story. That was my way in. And then from there, I got interested in Lena's partner, and, you know, and I branched out. I just, you know, started exploring the world through a bunch of different characters.
Okay. Would you say in that process, some people who write say, read more, to be a good writer, read more. Some say don't. Well, for your own ideas, and that'll influence you too much, and maybe you might, you know, I don't, you know, sort of absorb someone else's ideas and then just pass them as your own. What do you think on that? Where do you fall on that spectrum, you think?
Definitely, I read a lot.
Really?
I, you know, one of the reasons why I really love Emily St. John Mandel's work is that she has a similar project, I think, where she looks at a lot of different characters. Her novels tend to be, and I'm talking specifically about Station 11 and The Glass Hotel.
Yes.
They tend to be multi-perspective novels with a ton of different characters looking at events. And, you know, when I was working on No Gods, No Monsters, I was also simultaneously reading Station 11, because I had gotten the comparison when someone had read the lesson and they were like, this reminds me of Station 11. And so I checked it out and, you know, saw, you know, the similarity in project. And I learned a lot about how to, like, you know, balance all of these different perspectives from reading that work as well. I, you know, reading Ursula K. Le Guin and rereading her work has also helped me a lot. I read Alice Munro, you know, just to learn things about craft. She's just a really, you know, really intelligent storyteller. Her short stories are really, really deep, but also really accessible. Like, her language isn't, I would say her language is pretty spare, but she's doing a lot with the words that are on the page. And I learn a lot from reading her work. So yeah, I agree. I think that if you, you know, and, you know, other authors might not have that same approach, but I definitely have that approach. If I want to write, I read a lot.
Yeah. Are you into other, like, things like gaming, like role-playing games or maybe computer games, or do you do that at all?
Yes. I wasn't lucky enough to have role-playing games growing up, mm-hmm. unfortunately. You know, St. Thomas is a very small place, and there wasn't a role-playing culture. We had, like, Pokemon cards. I remember knowing I had friends that were into Pokemon. I was not the one, because you had to, like, collect them, and, you know, you had to buy them up, and that was not my thing. But, you know, now that I'm an adult, I wish that I was in, you know, I wish I had that, like, that exposure to role playing. I find it really interesting. I have a friend from the Virgin Islands right now. He's telling me about Magic the Gathering, and he really wants to play with me. So maybe in a year's time, I'll have more to say on role playing, or you know, tabletop. I do play video games, but I try not to play too many video games at once because I have a very obsessive personality. And if I start playing a video game, I will not stop until it's done.
Okay.
And so some examples of that, when I was in high school, my friend had, I didn't have a PlayStation 2, but he had one, and he let me borrow his PlayStation 2. I think by that time he had a PlayStation 3 or something. And he gave me a bunch of games. And one of them was Shadow of the Colossus. I don't know if you,
yes,
you know this game. I played that game and nothing else for months. I finished the game and just kept playing it. Wow. And he was so annoyed with me. He was like, when are you going to play the other games I gave you? And I was like, no, I'm really into Shadow of the Colossus right now. Okay. And so I just kept playing it. And I almost talked myself into getting the latest PlayStation just so I can buy the remake of Shadow of the Colossus so I could play it again.
Yeah.
Right. And just that game. I also got really into, I don't know which one now, it was one of the God of Wars. And I played that endlessly and never stopped. And then recently I got a Nintendo Switch and I play Smash Brothers.
Okay.
Yeah, I play online. I just go online and I play as myself. I'm just Cadwell on there, you know, playing Captain Falcon. And the reason why I like that game is because you can go on, you can play, and then you can put it down. Mm-hmm. I have the Zelda game, and same friend is like really upset with me right now because it's just sitting there because I know if I play it, I'm going to never stop playing it. And I'm trying to figure out when I can reward myself with it. It has to be between books. But right now I'm like, you know, knee deep in this new novel.
Okay. I guess make sure nobody ever shows you Dark Souls. Because that
Oh, no, I peeped that too. I think it would be a problem for sure.
Yeah. Because that's one of those really that, for those who don't know, Dark Souls is a game where basically it's a series of boss battles, and you're fighting these different, each enemy has a different strategy. The trick of the game is to try to figure out, how am I going to beat this enemy? What am I going to do? And it just...
That sounds like my kryptonite.
Yeah, yeah.
It's why I love Shadow of the Colossus so much. It was like, you know, it was a puzzle. It's just also a really beautiful game. Like the storytelling is very minimalist. Yeah. There's, you know, great music, just great scenery. Mm-hmm. I just would just like get on the horse and just ride through the countryside because it's just, you know, gorgeous to look at. Right. And I love games like that where you can kind of like open world, you can kind of like, you know, just explore.
Okay. Excellent. Another idea I wanted to explore was, mentioned the Caribbean, the background from St. Thomas. And I find something that's been underserved actually in fiction, it's getting better now. There's such a rich trove of material to draw from that region of the world. You know, we hear a lot of, you know, medieval Europe. You're hearing a lot of more East Asia now, China, Japan in fiction. But just the folklore of the Caribbean itself, I think it's just such a rich, you know, because a little bit of the colonialism is in there, and you have sometimes the colonizers' mythologies mixed up with the natives, how natives would deal with the changes in their lives, the disruptions. I was glad that you put some of that in there. You know, guys, I think it's really something that's underserved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting too, because, you know, folklore is so different from island to island, right? You know, the novel No Gods, No Monsters is kind of a sequel to a short story I wrote called Loneliness Is in Your Blood. And that one is about a Sukuyant. You know, it's about this Caribbean vampire-like creature. The way, you know, I would describe it as a combination of a vampire and a Selkie. Like, they remove their skin, they, you know, they go out into the night and they suck blood. Mm-hmm. So I wrote that short story, you know, just based off of stories that I had heard from my family growing up. And when I did some research on it, and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, authorial license there. Like the sukuyan in the story isn't the sukuyan from folklore, precisely. Yes. But there were so many names, you know, and it became this kind of refrain in the story where I would just list names of the different kinds of the way that different islanders from will name this creature. So it was, you know, Old Heg is one, Old Heeg, Sukuyant, Sukuya, Wangla Lady. All of these things are the same creature, but, you know, from different islands, there's these different, like, these different histories to the folklore, and there's, you know, these different interpretations of the folklore. So I found that really interesting. And, you know, it's kind of secretly, it became secretly an aspect of the novel. The way that I wrote the novel, I started thinking about, well, what if there's different, like, histories or origins or interpretations of the same monster? So there's werewolves mm-hmm. in the story, and there's the traditional werewolf, but that traditional werewolf is broken up into different, like, branches, you know. There's the American werewolf, and then there's the European werewolf, and then there's the native werewolf, and then there's also the weredogs of the Antilles, which is like mm-hmm. the Caribbean werewolf that has different properties. And it became fun for me to kind of think about, well, you know, these monsters that we know from popular folklore, from Caribbean folklore, what if they their magics have different origins, and that makes their monstrosity behave in different ways. So the weredogs are very sensitive to sensing magic because of their Caribbean origin, and they're linked to hurricanes instead of the moon. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in also having werewolves that are, you pass down from generation to generation, mm-hmm. but then all the ones that you get infected with the werewolf, gene, you mm-hmm. know, you acquire it through infection. And so that became a fun part of it for me.
Yeah. I always say there's a character in Haitian folklore called the Lugawu, which is kind of mm-hmm. a werewolf too. And I used to say to myself, Haiti, when the wolves in Haiti? I didn't even know wolves in Haiti. Where did that come from? And obviously it came from the French, and there's some influence in there. And...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the ones I heard growing up was the woo-woo. And this was specifically from my aunt. My aunt would tell me a lot of scary stories. And the story that I heard growing up was, like, when, you know, during power outages, the woo would come out and would mm-hmm. go hunting. Mm-hmm. And there was this story of, like, hearing clicking on the walls, and, you know, the woo was, you know, passing by. And that became an influence to the story. Uh-huh. And then there's stuff like Jumbies and... what's the monster? The other monster I was thinking about. So woo woo, Jumbies, Sukuyant. I'm gonna remember after this call.
Yeah, sure. One is usually one that attacks babies in the crib. There's one that mm-hmm. your parents would threaten you if you were being bad. Oh, this guy's gonna get you. This thing's gonna get you.
Yes, yes.
Man, there was another one. I thought the name in Creole, but
Cowfoot Lady. That's the one that I forgot about. And you know, when I was a kid, actually, we had a house. You know, we would go up, all the kids from the neighborhood would go up to another house to get, like, candy mm-hmm. and stuff. And there was a house that we had to pass by, and I think it was just abandoned, but mm-hmm. we just had this, like, mythology in the neighborhood among the children that Cowfoot Lady lived in that house. Okay. And so every time we passed the house, we'd just run really fast. Then we'd get our candy from up the street and then run back down really fast.
Excellent. Thank you for the stories. I was really, so wrapping up, where else can we see you? Where can we find you? I like to I know you're working on the second book in the trilogy. I saw that in your sort of a list of works, you've written for a number of publications. You've written for Wired, for instance, and everything. Do you do anything like that right now? Or right now it's pretty much straight the novelist part of it?
It's mostly just a novel. I have a few, like, special projects that I'm working on, but, you know, they won't be live until, you know, some months off. You can find me at my website, catwillturnbull.com. You know, I usually have updates there, but for the most part, right now is just trying to finish this book.
Okay.
Deadlines. Yeah.
Okay. We all have them. So, okay. Mr. Turnbull, it's been awesome talking to you. I wish you great luck in your career, and I look forward to reading the next book. Please don't George Martin it. And I know you're working hard. Before it goes, you got me on this one, so I really want to go with this one.
I'm just grateful. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And yeah, the next book, I'm gonna do it. It's gonna be done.
All right, I know. I believe it. Thank you so much. All right.
With that,
we're gonna turn the page and see you next time.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.